Hello everyone, and welcome back to the History of Scotland, episode 13, A Game of Thrones. Last week we went through what life was like as a Pict in the mid-10th century, in the 950s AD. So we will put an end to these special episodes now. We can maybe revisit them in another time, maybe in a few hundred years, 13th, 14th century. We'll think about it, because there obviously are some changes into later medieval life that I wish to go across, such as the medieval knight things of history that we know of today, but I want to touch on the stereotypes about them. But anyway, that's for a later episode, so we'll maybe do a few more special ones to keep giving you guys the context. In today's episode, we are going to return to our story as Culain comes to the throne of the Kingdom of Alba. Now, as we know, Culain was one of the three sons of Indulf, one of our previous kings of Alba, who died in 962 AD. The other two sons were Eochad, who died in 971 AD, and Aimleb, who died in 977 AD. And we're actually going to be touching on his reign today as well. And he will be reigning after Culain, but that's a spoiler. So let's get into the episode a little bit further. Indulf was in turn a son of Constantine II, as we also know, who died in 952 AD, a man who possessed a strong connection with the Scandinavian dynasty of Dublin. There is evidence to suggest that some of Constantine's descendants bore Scandinavian names. For instance, Indulf's name could either be a Gallicised form of Old English, per name as Eadulf, or a Gallicised form of the Old Norse personal name of Hindulf. If the latter possibility is indeed correct, Indulf's name could indicate that his mother was a member of a Scandinavian kingred. Likewise, with Aimleb's name could represent a form of Gaelic personal name such as Amleglab, or a Gallicised form of an Old Norse personal name of Olafur. Therefore, Aimleb's name could indicate that his mother was a member of a Scandinavian kingred as well, and perhaps a descendant of Aimleb. Curan died in 980-981 AD, or Aimleb MacGoffred, who also died in 941 AD. Further evidence of Scandinavian influence on the contemporary Scottish court may be a possible epithet according to Culain by the 9th-12th century Chronicle of the Kings of Alba, one of the main referencing points for this episode, and basically will be following us up to the end of this century. In one instance, this source records Culain's name as Culeryng. Most likely this is just Culeryngrig, modern Gaelic for Rai, being the Gaelic word for king, whilst it has also been suggested that this word represents the Old Norse Hingrig, meaning ring or ring giver. The name instead may be corrupted from a scribal error, and the word itself might refer to something else entirely. Culain and his immediate family were members of the ruling Alpinid dynasty. These were the descendants of Synod Mac Alpin, the first king of the Picts, who died in 858 AD. The root of this kingred remarkably early success laid in its ability to successfully rotate the royal succession amongst its members. For example, as we know, Indulf's father, a member of the clan of the branch of this dynasty, succeeded Constantine, a member of the clan of a separate branch, and following a remarkable reign of 40 years, resigned the kingship to the man's son, Malcolm I, who we also touched upon in last episodes. Culain's father, Indulf, succeeded to the kingship following Malcolm I's demise, which we touched upon 4 episodes ago, and who ruled as king up until his own death in 962 AD. The record of Indulf's fall at the hands of an invading Scandinavian host is the last time Irish and Scottish sources note Viking encroachment into the kingdom. The Scandinavian Kingdom of York had collapsed by the 950s AD, and the warbands of the kings of Dublin seemed to have ceased their overseas adventures during this period as well. Unlike English monarchs who had to endure Viking invasions and troubles from the 980s to the 1010s AD, the kings of Alba were left in relatively peace from about the time of Indulf's fall, free from such outside threats. However, the Alpinids seem to have struggled amongst themselves, with the descendants of Malcolm I and Indulf trading throne places amongst civil wars. The previous king of Alba, Dub, may have actually died due to Culain coming to the throne. And we can actually reference this upon one of the stones, which we also discussed in last week's episode. And this is the Susanoo Stone, which was found at Forez in Scotland. And this stone may, well, it may show that Culain consolidated his kingship around the time of Dubh's death. Although it is conceivable that Dubh was slain in favour of his successor, this may not necessarily have been the case. Certainly Culain is not stated to have been responsible for his death, and it is possible that events transpired without Culain's interference. Culain's undisputed reign seems to have spanned from 966 to 971 AD. As far as surviving sources record, Culain's reign appears to have been relatively uneventful. His death in 971 AD is noted by several sources. According to the Chronicle of Alba, Culain and his brother Aechad, who died in 971 as well, were killed by Britons. The Annals of Ulster also report that Culain fell in battle against the Britons, whilst the 12th century Chronicle of Scotrum specifies that Britons killed him within a burning house, similar to how we mentioned how sieges were becoming a much more prevalent way of warfare in Scotland at this time. The Chronicle of the Kings of Alba locates Culain's fall to Yebania. Although this might refer to Abington in South Lancashire, a more likely location may be preserved by the 12th, 13th century Chronicle of Melrose. This source states that Culain was killed at Lonias, a place name which seems to refer to either Lothan or Lennox, both plausible locations for an outbreak of hostilities between Scots and the Britons. As you know, the Kingdom of Strathclyde is on the border. In fact, Yebania itself could well refer to Lothan or Lennox. The account of Culain's demise, preserved by the prophecy of Berchen, is somewhat different. According to this source, Culain met his end while seeking a foreign land, which could indicate that he was attempting to lift taxes from the Cumbrians. The Chronicle of the King's Alba reports that Culain's killer was a certain mother of a daughter who Culain had actually taken himself as either a concubine or a bride. The 13th century verse, Chronicle of Melrose and Chronicle of Scotland likewise identify Culain's killer as this person, the father of an abducted daughter raped by the king, which says more to be more of a concubine, less of a fulfilling wife, but who knows? Either way, they reference the same person. There is reason to suspect that Culain's killer was a different person. It was in fact the King of Strathclyde, who also died in 975 AD. Although there was no specific evidence that the father was himself a king, the fact that Culain was involved with his daughter, coupled with the fact that his warband was evidently strong enough to overcome that of Culain's, suggests that the father of the bride must have been a man of eminent standing, suggesting potentially a king or a lord. At about the time of Culain's demise, a granddaughter of this person could well have been in her teens or twenties, and it is possible that the recorded events refer to a visit by the King of Alba to the court of the King of Strathclyde. Such a visit may have taken place in the context of Culain's exercising his lordship over the Britons. His dramatic death suggests that the Scots severely overstepped the bounds of hospitality and could indicate that the father was compelled to fire his own hall. Certainly, such killings are not unknown in Icelandic and Irish sources. The Lothan place name of West Lytton appears at Lutton Rudrick in the 12th century. The fact that the place name seems to refer to a man named of this father of the bride could indicate that this was a place where Culain and Aechad met their end in a fiery blaze in retaliation for raping his daughter. Another way in which Culain may have met his end concerns the record of his father's earlier seizure of Edinburgh, perceived by the Chronicles of the Kings of Alba. The fact that this conquest would have likely included at least part of Lothan, coupled with the evidence of locating Culain's demise to the same area, could indicate that Culain was slain in the midst of exercising overlordship of this contested territory. If so, the records that link the father with the reconciled could reveal that this wronged father exploited Culain's vulnerable position in the region and that the father seized the opportunity to avenge his daughter. Although the Chronicle of the Kings of Alba report that Dubh's brother Synod MacAlpin died was the next King of Alba, Irish sources such as the Royal Genealogies, the 14th century Annals of Tignoc, and the Annals of Ulster appear to reveal that Emlab possessed the kingship before his death at Synod's hands, who is also Kenneth the Second. Whilst Kenneth may have initially succeeded to the kingship, it seems that Emlab, the brother of Cullen, was able to mount a successful, if only temporary, bid for the throne. After what happened with Cullen's death, with one of his brothers already dying, Imlab seized the throne before Kenneth II could take it upon himself. Certainly, of aforesaid annals entries style Imlab as a king and accord Kenneth II a mere patronymic name. Imlab's tenure is not attested by any Scottish king's list, and it would appear that his reign was indeed brief, perhaps dating from 971 to 977 AD. One possibility that the kingship had been shared between Imlab and Kenneth until the former's death. This revolving succession within the Alpinid dynasty reveals that the inter-dynastic struggle between Cullen and Dubh was continued by their respected brothers. And remember, Cullen and Dubh was Malcolm I and Constantine II's side. As for Cullen's older brother, Aechad, this man's death with Cullen seems to be evidence of his prominent position within the kingdom. The fact that Imlab reigned after his brother's death likewise appears to indicate that he too played an important part in Cullen's regime. One of Kenneth's first acts as king was evidently an invasion of Kingdom of Strathclyde. This campaign could well have been a retaliatory response to Cullen's killing, carried out in the context of crushing a Briton affront to Scottish authority. In any event, Kenneth's invasion ended in defeat, a fact which coupled with Cullen's killings reveals that the Kingdom of Strathclyde was indeed a power to be reckoned with. Cullen appears to have been buried at St Andrews, the site of his father's burial. According to the prophecy of Berchan, he was laid to rest above the edge of the wave, a location which seems to refute St Andrews. In other sources, he is sometimes stated to have been buried in Iona. If we touch upon the reference of how Cullen died again, there is reason to suspect that this person was the King of Strathclyde. Although there's no specific evidence that he was himself a king, the fact that Cullen was involved with his daughter, coupled with the fact that his warband was able to defeat Cullen's, suggests he was strong enough to do this. A visit could have taken place in the context of Cullen exercising his lordship over these Britons of Strathclyde. His dramatic death suggests that the Scots severely underestimated how strong the Kingdom of Strathclyde was at this time, and also could indicate that the king was compelled to fire and burn his own hall just to retaliate against Cullen. Even though he is only attested in sources outlining Cullen's demise and is not heard of again, Cullen was obviously succeeded by his brother Dubh. One of the first acts of Dubh was to avenge his brother. So again, this all kind of says to me that the Kingdom of Strathclyde had a daughter. Cullen unfortunately abducted said daughter, raped her, and then he met his own demise when he was exercising his authority in the Kingdom of Strathclyde. Maybe the king let him in. They were having a meal, having a meeting in the hall, and then as he slept, the King of Strathclyde took it upon himself to enact revenge against his daughter, raping and burn to death Cullen and his brother. Now, again, the sources are not very clear on this, but that's at least where I'm leaning towards. As we previously mentioned, after Cullen's death, there seems to have been a start of a civil war between Imlab, who was the son of Indulf and the brother to Cullen, who clearly wanted to end the throne, trading places with the other side of the family. And the other side this time was Kenneth II, who was, in fact, the son of Malcolm I, if you remember when I mentioned him a few episodes ago. Historically, Cullen's brother was able to seize a throne for him first, but his reign was shorter, and even though Kenneth II declared himself king at the same time as Imlab, we'll touch on Imlab first just to go with a chronological order. Imlab possessed the kingship before his death at his brother's hands. Whilst Kenneth may have initially succeeded to the kingship, it seems that Imlab was able to mount a successful, if only temporary, bid for the throne. There is a black and white illustration of a king being rowed down a river in a rowboat by eight other kings. An early 12th century depiction of Edgar, King of the English, being rowed down the River Dee by eight kings. According to the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle, Edgar met six kings at Chester. By the 12th century, chronicles allege that eight kings rode Edgar down the river in an act of submission. The assembly itself took place in 975, when Aimlab may have been reigned as king, and he is briefly mentioned in this. Aimlab's reign is not attested by any Scottish king list, and it would appear that his regime was indeed brief, perhaps dating for only a few years. In the midst of this interval, the 9th, 12th century Anglo-Saxon Chronicle reveals that Edgar, king of the English, assembled a massive naval force and met with six kings at Chester in 975 AD. Although later sources corroborate the event, the reliability of the names accorded to the assembled kings is less certain. Two of the named kings appear to be the aforesaid Ainwal and Kenneth II. Considering the fact that the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle numbers the kings at six, if Kenneth II was indeed present, it is unlikely that Aimlab was in attendance as well. Although the chronological evidence concerning the reigns of Kenneth II and Aimlab's reign is uncertain, with Kenneth II's reign perhaps dating from a similar time but to a longer period such as 995 AD, the part played by the particular King of Alba at the assembly could well have concerned the frontier of his realm. One of the other named kings seemed to have been Marcus Mac Urt, whilst others could have been the man's brother Godfred. These two Islesmen may have been regarded as threats by the Scots and Cumbrians. Marcus and Godfred had recorded to have devastated Anglesey at the beginning of the decade, which could indicate that Edgar's assembly was undertaken as a means to counter the menace posed by these energetic siblings. In fact, there is evidence to suggest that as a consequence of the assembly at Chester, the brothers may have turned their attention from the British mainland westwards towards Ireland instead, and that Godfred ceased his operations in Wales until the next decade. Whatever the case, within 2 years, both Dinulf and Edgar were dead. Contemporary English sources describe the period after Edgar's demise as a time of dissension, trouble, and sedition, a most unhappy time. In fact, the upheaval caused many of the deaths of these men have been contributed to Kenneth II's elimination of Aimlab himself. According to the 12th century De Primum Sanctorum et Adventum, at some point Edgar granted Lothian to Kenneth II in return for his recognition of English overlordship. If correct, one possibility is that the translated dates in the 960s to 970s AD and was intended to assist Kenneth II's opposition against Aimlab. One of Kenneth II's first acts as king was evidently an invasion of the Kingdom of the Cumbrians. Although this campaign may have been a retaliatory response to Culain's killing, it may be more likely that Kenneth II carried out this enterprise in context of crushing a British affront to Scottish authority, rather than a means of avenging the death of his kinsmen. In any event, Kenneth II's invasion ended in defeat, a fact which, coupled with Culain's killing, reveals that the Kingdom of Strathclyde was indeed a bigger power, as we already know. The Chronicle of the Kings of Alba was compiled in Kenneth's reign, but many of the place names mentioned are entirely corrupt, if not fictitious. Whatever the reality, the Chronicle states that he immediately plundered Strathclyde in part. Kenneth's infamy were slain with very great slaughter in Mon Uncor. The Chronicle further states that Kenneth plundered Northumbria three times, first as far as Stainmore, then to Sulham, and lastly to the River Dee by Chester. These raids may belong to around 980 AD, when the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle records attacks on Cheshire. At some point, Aimlab himself would die, either at the hands of Kenneth II during the Civil War, or at the hands of a raid from the Kingdom of Strathclyde. Either way, Aimlab, brother of Culain, died. Kenneth II now had no rival to his throne. He, being the son of Malcolm I, was able to finally take what he viewed as his inheritance. But one could argue Aimlab also viewed it in that way, being the son of Indulf, and thus the revolving door continues. In 973 AD, the Chronicle of Melrose reports that Kenneth, with MacAlpin, the King of Strathclyde, Marcus, the King of Many Islands, and other kings, Welsh and Norse, came to Chester to acknowledge the overlordship of the English king Edgar, as we previously touched upon. The Annals of Tigernach, in an aside, named three of the Mormers at Alba in Kenneth's reign in the entry 976. These three people were to have been presented to Kenneth to help spread religion in the land. Later on in the Chronicles of Kings of Alba, it actually does state a potential date to where Aimlab died in 977, where Kenneth himself killed him after being in a battle with Aimlab. Adam of Brennan tells that Sweyn Forkbeard found exile in Scotland at this time as well, but whether this was with Kenneth or one of the other kings of Scotland, it is unknown. Also at this time, Nigel's saga of the Orkney Saga and other sources recount wars between the Scots and the Northmen, but these are more probably wars between Sigurd Hovardson of the Earl of Orkney and the Mormers or Kings of Moray. The chronicle says that Kenneth founded a great monastery at Brechin. Kenneth was not long for this world himself. He was killed in 995 AD after a rule of around 20 years. The Annals of Ulster say by deceit, and the Annals of Tignach say by his subjects. Some later sources, such as the Chronicle of Melrose and John of Fordon and Andrew of Whitton, provide more details that clearly are not. The simplest account is that he was killed by his own men in Fettercorn through the treachery of Fingal, also known as Fimbulhe or Felina, a daughter of a Mormer of Angus, in revenge for killing his only son. The prophecy of Brechin adds little to our knowledge, except that it names Kenneth the Kinslayer and states he died in Strathmore, obviously Kinslayer for killing Aimlab. Kenneth's son, Malcolm I, was later King of Alba, and we'll touch upon his reign in a later episode. He also had another son who died in 999 AD called Dungal, and then he had a son who died in potentially 1034 AD living in pretty much relevance, like he was barely mentioned in any of the chronicles. According to John of Fordon, Kenneth II of Scotland attempted to change the succession rules, and this is where it comes under a lot of criticism for how he died. He was allowing the nearest survivor in the blood to the deceased of King to succeed, thus securing the throne for his own descendants and ending the civil war that was plaguing the dynasty for the past 100 years. He reportedly did so to specifically exclude Constantine III and Kenneth III. These two men jointly conspired against him, convincing the daughter of Cuncar, who we previously mentioned, and the Mormer of Angus, to kill the king. She reportedly did so to achieve personal revenge, as Kenneth II had also killed her only son, as we mentioned. But the entries in the Chronicle of the Picts and Scots, collected by William of Forbes, provide the account of Fina killing the Kenneth in revenge, but not for her affiliation to Constantine or Kenneth III. These entries date to the 12th and 13th centuries, so again, many years after the death of Kenneth. The Annals of Ulster simply record that Kenneth II was deceitfully killed with no indication of who killed him. But regardless, this would make sense. If he was trying to change the succession to end this civil war, to only allow his own descendants to come to the throne, this would explain it. Because as I've said in previous episodes, it wasn't a primogeniture relationship. The oldest son wouldn't get the throne. It was up to any family member who had the strongest claim to grab it, similar to how the Anglo-Saxon kingdoms were ruling. But Kenneth, he didn't like this, and he wanted to change this, but as we know, he was failed in this task. In the account of John of Fordon, Constantine III was plotting unceasingly the death of the king and his son. One day, Kenneth II and his companions went hunting into the woods, at no great distance from his own abode. This hunt took to Fettercorn, where the daughter, who had lost her only son, resided. She approached him to proclaim her loyalty and invited him to visit her residence, whispering into his ear that she had information about a conspiracy. She managed to lure him to an out-of-the-way little cottage, where a booby trap was hidden. Inside the cottage was a statue, connected by strings to a number of crossbows. If anyone touched or moved the statue, he would trigger the crossbows and fall victim to their arrows. Kenneth II gently touched the statue, was shot through by arrows sped from all sides, and fell without uttering another word. The daughter who lost her son escaped through the woods and managed to join her abettors, Constantine III and Graham. The hunting companions soon discovered the Bloody King. They were unable to locate the daughter, but burned Fettercorn to the ground. One of the chronicles dismisses this elaborate plotting, and I too would agree about the mechanical contraption. And it sounds like something out of a fairy tale story, but it shows the idea that potentially there was a conspiracy involving a numerous amount of people. Obviously, Constantine III and Kenneth III, who would be later ruling in Scotland, they obviously wanted to try and stop Kenneth II from changing the way a king of Alba was chosen. Kenneth II wanted to make sure his sons would become king next, and Kenneth III and Constantine III didn't want this. So they may have looked for other conspirators across the realm of people that were wronged by Kenneth II, and maybe this daughter who lost her son to Kenneth II was one of them, and maybe she was the one who was the person to enact the killing and do the killing herself. But may have she been working with them, may have she been not, we don't know. But either way, that conspiracy does make sense in terms of existing, because in history we all know that if you ever try to change the succession, things go wrong, civil wars happen. You can just look to England, France, Germany, Italy, many other great kingdoms, and how their succession laws end in civil wars. But sadly, we will leave it there for this week, just as things are coming to a bit of a climax between these two sides of the family, of the royal family of Scotland. Who would have known we would be trading places so much between Indulf and Malcolm I's descendants? This is so much more worse than how I would imagine an Anglo-Saxon kingdom to be. Even though the Anglo-Saxon kings had this similar problem, I really don't think it was this bad. But heck, we are here. As I have said many times, with the sources being very small and lacking, we keep going through a few kings an episode. But don't worry, we've actually slowed down to a pace of 50 years per episode. This will obviously get better as time goes on, and we can begin to spend longer and longer on our kings of Scotland. So do not fear, we're not trying to rush this. We're actually having the best 7 episodes planned and ready coming for you in the coming weeks. And I promise they will slow down, and I've actually already planned when we get to the Dunkeld dynasty that few of the kings, they're going to have at least 4 or 5 episodes each, so we can begin to slow things down and tell a proper story. But as I said, it will take time to get there. We are slowing down, we're reaching a few years hopefully per episode, and it won't be such big jumps. But I think we've done good this episode. You know, we've covered off 3 of the decent sized kings. As always, if there's any corrections or issues with this podcast, please let me know at thehistoryofscotlandpodcast@gmail.com. That is historyofscotlandpodcast@gmail.com. Next week, we're going to come to the big finale between this infighting and this civil war of trading places with kings. With Culain's son coming to the throne, his name is Constantine III, the person who was conspiring against Kenneth II in trying to kill him after he was trying to change the succession laws in Scotland. We just touched upon him in this episode. This will all ultimately lead to a new royal family taking over the Kingdom of Scotland, the House of Dunkeld, but that is for next week's episode to jump into. As always, guys, please leave a review if you can. Our podcast is always available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, Amazon Music, and Google Podcasts. Other than that, have a great week. Next week, our podcast will be available probably Friday, Saturday. We'll see. But until then, stay safe. Have a great week, and I'll catch you all on the next one. Peace.